She has an initial with Ephraim, then Asher. We left off last week. We were discussing the Ramah, who was commenting on the Rishalmi about whether there is a problem of Bora when you peel items. So we're working with the assumption that there is some kind of a potential problem of Bora and peeling, even though not everybody would agree that was actually the conclusion of the Halacha. But the Ramah does accept that idea that peeling may be a potential Halacha. And the Ramah drew a distinction between whether the peeling is being done for immediate use or for later use. So if it's being done for immediate use, then it's permissible. If it's being done for later use, then it can potentially become problematic. So we were bothered with the question that if you really believe that peeling falls under the category of Borer, so then why doing it for immediate use, why should that solve the problem? After all, it seems to be missing one of the other conditions of Borer, and the other condition of Borer being that it has to be Ochem et Opsolus. If you have to take the good from the bad, you take the bad from the good, so most of the Rishonim assume it's a repassing Shabbat, and that's a serious problem of Borer. Taking bad from good is always a problem of Borer. So if taking bad from good is always a problem of Borer, why does peeling ever become Mutter? It's the classic example of removing the bad from the good. So we developed the Yisod last week in the name of the Bir Halacha, which Shabbu suggests that these conditions of Ochem Mitzolos, Mitzolos Miochel, are not absolute. Rather, they're a description of a process, the process being either derech achila or counters the derech malacha, derech bari. So whenever something is labeled as derech achila, it's automatically permissible. Whenever something is labeled as derech malacha, then it's going to be problematic. So 9 out of 10 times, the way to determine whether it's derech achila is when you ochel mitzolos, because people like to eat. That's called derech achila. When you remove the bad, that's called derech malacha, that's called derech bari. But whenever you have a situation, argues the derech malacha, where it's just not practical to remove the good from the bad, it's not normal to remove the good from the bad. The derech achila of this particular food is bad from good. So then that's okay. So that's called derech achila. So it's in power. How can you peel the orange? You take the good from the bad. How can you eat the banana? You take the good from the bad. The normal way of eating a banana is to take the bad from the good. So since that's the normal way of doing it, that becomes, in a sense, elevated to the category of derech achila. And we can forego that quote-unquote article condition of achim. So it's not as important as we thought it was. It's rather indicative of a derech achila. So this idea becomes very important in other areas of potential borer. Rabbi Feinstein uses this in Tshuva when he discusses a shaila of washing fruit on Shabbos. Should washing fruit pose a potential problem of borer? So Moshe says, if you should, take the fruit, fruit's dirty, stick it under the water. So even though I'm doing it, let's say it will be a day, and I'm doing it for right away, but I'm removing the bad from the good, I'm pushing the dirt off of the fruit, so maybe that should pose a problem. But so Moshe quotes the same idea that the Bir Halacha has recently peeled, and he says, no, that since this is the way to get dirt off, how do you get the fruit off the dirt? You scratch your head, how to do that? So the only way to do it is to get the dirt off the fruit, so that's called derech achila. It's tzadikur aichel, who cares, so what? As long as that's the derech achila, that would be permissible. Then the Moshe has a few other possible tzadim, just in case you don't accept this idea. Maybe there are other grounds to be made in the case of the fruit, based on other considerations. Maybe one can argue that it's not even considered to be really psoles. Why is it not psoles? Maybe the person doesn't care so much about what's on the fruit. So this is a general question. We spoke about this when we introduced the Melacha Borer, that Borer is presupposing that there's Ochel and there's Psolas. So what constitutes Psolas? It's also either really bad stuff, or garbage, and you have a pile of fruit that's mixed in with dirt and pebbles. That's classic Borer. Then the Rishon and Chiddush, that even if both items are edible, but I don't want one of those items, that's also considered to be Borer. What if you have two things that are mixed together, and I really don't even care the way they are? Even the way, by Shoshav, even the state that they're in now, I don't really care that much about. It's nice, it's like the SSA, make it a little bit cleaner, a little bit better, but push comes to shove, I would really eat it the way it is now. So we're going to talk a lot about that a little bit later on, probably not this week. We're talking about straining, about straining water. What talks about, you have a barrel of wine, and in the barrel of wine, there's some dregs in the barrel of wine, and you're really okay the way the wine is now. You would drink the wine the way it is now, but it's nicer, it's a little bit cleaner, a little bit better to strain the wine. So it could be that's not a problem, but altogether, that's not considered to be a malacha, because I'm not really doing anything, since it's not really eichel and psoilus, it's all edible, it's edible, drinkable the way it is. This is going to become a very important shaila about filtering water. There's a big shaila. If you live in New York City, so many people are machped not to drink the regular water. It's a big machlokes of kashrus about the status of the tap water in New York, whether there's a problem of taloim, potential bugs in the water. So those who are machmed not to drink the water, they have a further shaila. They allow to filter the water on Shabbos. That's part of that shayla. So again, we'll talk about that a little bit later on. It probably boils down to how serious you take the kashrus concern. If you take the kashrus concern as being very, very serious, and you would never ever drink unfiltered water in New York, so then you're opening up a potential problem of maybe that's called Borer on Shabbos. If you're not really convinced that's a problem, you really would drink it, but you have a home brother. Yeah, you just can see this, you want to filter your water, so then maybe that's less of a Borer problem. So again, we'll talk about that a little bit later on. So that's where Moshe discusses that same kind of an idea here by the fruit. So just how dirty is the fruit? So if the fruit is mamash filthy, it's muddy and filled in nobody else, with nobody normal, you wouldn't eat the fruit the way it is. So that's okay. But if you have an apple, you go to the store, it's pretty clean to me. So why am I washing my apple? Because my mother told me I have to wash the apple. My wife told me I have to wash the apple. So I can either, you know, if there's no water, around, what would I do? I'm out of teal. So every single fruit that came in the Beit Meir teals were washed before. let's be real. Who's going to vote on that one, right? If you've been in a teal once or twice and the fruit wasn't washed, so what do you do? So if you're not careful, you just eat them. You rub it against your clean t-shirt or something, you know, it's good enough in your Yetzi I'm washing it. So the answer is that we're not so careful about just how critical the dirt of the fruit is. If that's the case, maybe it's not better off, you know. So Rav Moshe has a few tzedakim to be made to wash off the fruit. So according to the first side of Rav Moshe, it's going to be mutter to wash off the fruit, even though it is theoretically a burden problem, but you're meeting all the conditions. So you're doing it via da'im, and you're doing it for immediate use, and even though you're missing the condition of Eitzim Tamsov, so this, here you're allowed to flip the conditions, because that's the derech achila b'kach. Then Rav Moshe quotes another possibility, that he said, maybe this is not called burden altogether. He said, you're just holding a fruit under a stream of water. That's not called butter, that's called washing fruit. And he says, we've never ever heard, you're not allowed to wash the dishes on Shabbos. The Gemara talks about not washing dishes because of achana. That's the sugya in the Gemara. And you're not allowed to wash dishes, let's say, on Shabbos afternoon, if you finish eating already, and you're not going to use those dishes anymore, then you're not supposed to wash those dishes unless it's sharing your Shabbos, unless you're very upset about the dishes. They're bothering you, you're afraid bugs are going to come, it's very, very upsetting, and there's no place to put the dirty dishes. So that's not called a chana, but I'm not washing them to prepare for the Shabbos. I'm washing them because it's irking my nerves on Shabbos. And the poskim make that a very common shayla. Let's say it's not irking your nerves, but it's irking somebody else's nerves who's very close to you. And the odds are that their nerves are going to be frazzled. That's going to impact in your nerves as well. So also, to wash the dishes. But the Gemara discusses washing dishes only from the vantage point of Achana. The Gemara says that on Friday night when you finish eating and you want to wash the dishes for tomorrow, that's perfectly okay. The Gemara quotes the Brice, it says that's permissible. So Rashi should throw out a question. Why isn't that called Boirer? I'm separating the bad from the good. So that's called Boirer. That's called Derech Mechitza. Shtifas Kalim. That's for washing dishes. That doesn't have a shame Malocha Mechlau on it. So Rashi says maybe washing fruit also is not called Malocha. I think there's a Gemara that has a base that does talk about a problem of Boirer on washing fruit. So Rashi says you look carefully at the Gemara. The Gemara says about Shora Saperus. Shora means to soak the fruit. So it says you fill up a bucket of water and you put the fruit inside to soak in the bucket of water, maybe that has a shame border on it. If you're just holding it under a stream of water, maybe that's not considered to be a border. So it might just three different stadim to be makel, why you're permitted to wash fruit on Shabbos. But there's a big difference between the three different approaches. If you go down either approach number two, that you don't really care about the dirt anyway, or down approach number three, that you're that's not called derech border, that's just called just washing something off. If you go down those route 2 and 3, then it's not a problem but altogether. It's not even a discussion. And therefore, you can do it even for later in the day. You can't do it for Motzei Shabbos, that would be a chana, but let's say I want to wash off some fruit on Friday night, that I'm ready for Shabbos morning for later in the afternoon, so that would be okay, because it's just not boring altogether. If you go down route number 1, that fundamentally washing fruit is boring, and you have to make sure to meet all three conditions, so then one of the conditions is lialter, it has to be for right away. Right away means right away. We'll talk a little bit later on, probably after Yom Tov, about how exactly we define right away. Is that a number on the clock? Is that a mindset? Is that case by case, depending on the context? But let's say if a person wants to finish lunch, now they want to wash fruit for 4 o'clock in the afternoon, assuming that the lunch didn't end at 3:30, assuming the lunch ended at 1:30, and now they want to prepare fruit so people have nash on 4 o'clock. So according to the first approach of motion, that would be a problem of butter, because you are meeting some of the conditions, but you're missing that important condition of the Alta. Because if you go down the second and the third root of the Moshe, so that would be permissible. That's not all the Bible altogether. Yes. I think that more on the safer side, one should try to wash fruit right before the meal. Before you're playing any, take a fruit out of the fridge, you want to eat the apple something, so you just wash it on the spot. That's permissible on Shabbos. Do more than that to prepare for later. So that's, I didn't say it's also, I said that according to some of them approach the promotion, that may pose a problem. So everything we've been talking about at the end of last week and this week, it's all been revolving around that Yerushalmi that speaks about the peeling of the garlic as being a problem of Orer. And then the Ramal quotes from Rishon, who qualified that by saying that if it's done for immediate use, so then it all of a sudden becomes Mutter. So again, we were bothered with the same question that Shabur had, is that what happened to Ocham Tov Sola? So the answer is that's called Derech Echila. Is there any other answer, any other solution to this problem, any other way of reading this Yerushalmi and the Ramal that could maybe open up a different world for us in terms of Borer? So the Baal Ocham himself, and a little bit earlier, has a little bit of a different approach. Almost like two different Bialochas have two different Mahalach and two different approaches about how to solve this peeling situation. And each one of them opens up our eyes for a potential cool in terms of the Chizbara. So the Bialochah has a long discussion about how Bora plays out on the Shabbos table in terms of people eating fish and people eating chicken, taking out moving the chicken bones out of the way, moving the fish bones out of the way. So it's Yadua that the reason why they became a minhag Yisrael in many communities to eat gefilte fish was exactly because of this problem. That eating the other fish, like white fish with bones, that kind of stuff, poses a whole series of different issues of Bor and Shabbos. So the easiest way to avoid those things is to eat fish without any bones. So that was the birth of gefilte fish. So all of our foods on the Shabbos table have the sources in halacha. We show it because of Hilchas Achzor, Hilchas Azman, all the different halachas. And gefilte fish became part of our BL because of Hilchas Bayra. Remember a few years ago, from Yeshivas, I took a group of Bachurim to Eretz Israel during the winter break. One time we did it during the Shnas HaShemitah, and then we did it during the regular Shabbat, during the regular year. So we went to go see how Shabbos is, it's a funny trip, go see how Shabbos is observed in Eretz Israel today. Go see how you keep Shabbos in all kind of strange, up-to-date modern kinds of scenarios. So we spent one day in Shai Tzedek Hospital watching how they deal with Shabbos. They took us to an army base and they showed us how they deal with Shabbos. They took us to Tzomit Institute, the place we went running around. They took us to go to Kibbutz Lavi, to go see all their innovations in terms of Shabbos. To go running around to see how Shabbos is kept in all places. So in the middle we had, my goal was to say Shurim, so we used to learn in the morning, so we'd go through all the cities that we were going to see, and then we'd go in the afternoon running around the country, trying to see all the different innovations of Shabbos. So they wanted, it was a strange, I didn't plan the program, but somebody who planned the program said they thought it would be nice if we would have a Shabbos meal, and we would have somebody would come and discuss about all the halachic background of the Shabbos meal and all the halachic issues of Zmiras and all the historical issues of Zmiras and everything you want to know about Zmiras. I don't know, so they brought in somebody to speak about the history of Zmiras, and I think I spoke about filter fish and shul, whatever it was. And we had, the only problem was that we couldn't fit that into the Friday night part of the program, because Friday night I think we're supposed to be in Shabbos in Kibbutz Levi. So we were in Yerushalayim, so they decided we'll have a Shabbos meal on Tuesday night. So that's what we did. So they took us to a restaurant and we rented out a room in the restaurant and we had a Shabbos meal. We sang Shalom Aleichem, and then this guy got up and gave his whole history about Shalom Aleichem. So we sang a Shishchayel, and he gave his whole Shiva Shchayel. We didn't make it for Shem Malchus, just, and he's telling us, and we had a Shiva Shalayayin, and then he's serving the Chalas, and telling us about the different, the Temerichal, and Yemchal, Shbemchal, everyone's different, and we're talking about the Filter Fish, and we're talking about Shalom, and we're having, sitting around Tuesday night in Yerushalayim, singing Zemiris. And I think that the people in the rest of the restaurant thought we're absolutely out of our mind. Singing Baruch Kalaga to them. Very, very, very strange. Strange yourself. But at least we learned a lot about the historical background of gefilte fish. So you don't need that much, you don't need a PhD in history to figure out that gefilte fish came because of the Bor problems. So the Mishnah Berurah has a whole discussion about the Bor on fish and Bor on chicken bones and all the above. And he quotes the following possibility. He's based on a little bit on a Marshal, a little bit on a Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah helps the whole Yisrael that what's called Tikkun Eichel. That we can always draw a distinction between what's called Meleches Boirer and Tikkun Eichel. Tikkun Eichel just means, it's almost like Derech Achila kind of an idea. I'm not really doing Boirer, I'm just preparing just eating my food. This is the normal way of just, a person eats food, this is how you eat food. So this is called Tikkun Eichel B'Alma. What does it mean? How do you know whether something is Boirer, whether something is just Tikkun Eichel B'Alma? So the Mishnah Berurah develops, based on earlier poskim, the following, he said, that when you have something which is all connected together, it's a Kadosh Baruch Hu made it as a tarobes. It's a tarobes. It's chicken together with the chicken bones, and it's fish together with the fish bones. And I'm just moving the stuff. It's all b'chubiyach. It's really all the same dish. It's all the same piece of on the same plate. It's all the same item. And I'm just moving away the bones in order just to get the food that I'm eating. Man, that's not called derech b'yer. That's called derech tikkun v'yamah. I give all. I'm doing psalms b'yochel. And in theory, I could take the chicken from the bones. It's not like the case of the peels where it's impossible. I could theoretically take the chicken. It's not so crazy to say, pull the chicken away rather than pushing the bones out of the way. Go for the fish itself rather than pushing the bones out of the way. I could do it. It's not the same as trying to peel a banana by removing the fruit out of the banana and out of the peel, not vice versa. It's possible. It's doable. It may even be normal. The Mishnah says, no. One could argue that's called Tikkun Rechav Yama, and that would be okay. So that would be a tremendous kula. So the Mishnah Berurah is quoting a source for this idea of Tikkun Rechav Yama. He quotes this Ramah about peeling garlic. He says, and that's the reason why you're allowed to peel garlic for right away. If you're doing it for later in the day, you can't call that Tikkun Rechav. I'm not in the process of eating. But as long as it's done in the process of eating, it's being done the altar, it's being done in the process of eating, and it was all Mechumayach in the first place. It's not like I had a pile of fruit and then some dirt fell into the fruit. It's not like somebody artificially made a pile of peanuts and raisins and now I'm separating one from the other. No, it was mechuba yachad. It was naturally connected together. And I'm just doing it in the process of eating. So maybe that's called tikkun rechav yama. And even though I'm removing the psal from the yochel, maybe that's okay. So the Mishnah Berurah says, maybe that's what the Rishonim and the Ramah is based on. If that's the case, that would be a tremendous one. The Mishnah Berurah says that that's the limits chusin klal Yisrael. He says a lot of people when they're eating the chicken, you know, most people aren't sitting and tumbling about it. They're taking this from that. Tikkun Rechav Yama, it's all okay. It's all b'chul yachad. It's all right. If you go down this route, this would be a source of a very big kula. He asked most kids they don't even know these things exist. Anyone under the age of 20 probably never heard of this. But watermelons, believe it or not, used to have pits. You guys ever see pits in a watermelon? Think of a watermelon, those little black seeds, you never even saw them, right? You never heard of them. You're going to read about them like in a book from the old world, and the grandparents are around. The watermelons do that. I still never understand, if there are no seeds, how does the next watermelon come? I never understood that. So there must be some deep dark secret to that. So watermelons used to have black seeds in them, and that used to be the disaster. That was the Chol Shabbos disaster in every camp. I remember every summer was the same story. The first Friday night, they would serve watermelon, and then they would make the same announcement 100 times over. No one's allowed to pluck out, you know, not allowed to take out the seeds out of the watermelon. The Shabbos would say, they're right, it's have skill, it's buried, da 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 da. So you would have, we used to call it, at the time, we called the machine gun, the watermelon eaters, because the guy would eat the watermelon, then how many of those black sheep pits can you shoot at the guy in front of you? So that would usually last the first week or two of camp. Then afterwards, they would realize it was impossible. So then they would start serving other kinds of desserts. Then they would start serving ices. And the ices were impossible to open because they would always rip the letters on them. So that would last about a week or two. Then every time, they can never get it right. And you remember when I was a kid, they would never get it right. Every dessert was always Chol Shabbos dessert. But anyway, that was the old days. So somebody came up with this phenomenal idea that let's get rid of the pits of the watermelon. And again, how it works in the agriculture, I don't know. But now there are no more black seeds. But in the old days, there were black seeds. They used to pose a challenge of players. So the post can write that according to this Mishnah Berurah, this would be a good holding a kula. Maybe there's no, it's not fire. Why? Because the Rebbe Shalom created the pits as part of the watermelon. So it's derech chibur, derech ha'ochel v'yos kacha. And I'm not doing it because it's boyer, I'm doing it as tikkun rechav yama. Even though I could theoretically figure out an eitzah, how to remove it with the mouth, no, I'm allowed to just pluck off the pits just like that, eat the watermelon, and show them Israel. I had to go. So the whole thing that we grew up as kids thinking this is like the worst, this and driving cars was like the worst possible thing you can do on Shabbos. Going to this line, Mishnah Berurah, that's the gamut.
I'm saying there's between
tikkun rechav
and derech
chibur. Oh, so derech chibur. So derech chibur, the first Mishnah Berurah approach was that there's no other way to do it. There's no way to get the banana out of it without removing the peel. So then we automatically call it derech chibur. Tikkun rechav means I could do it. It's possible for me to remove. I could sit in the dreidel and pull out the chicken out of the bones. But I'm not going to do it.
Why does derech chibur have to be, there's no other way? It's just the way that people do it. It's the way that people do it. Even if there are two different ways, why can't that?
Oh, you're very, very dark. It's a very fine line. What if it's, in theory, there's a way to do it, but it's not normal to do it that way? Okay, so that's a further shot of the post. According to that, the first Mishnah Berurah. So again, Mishnah Berurah has two different biurim, two different places. He discusses this heter of peeling the garlic for the altar. Everyone agrees you can peel the garlic right away. The Ramah says the favorite, if you want to eat the garlic right away, you can peel it right away. But we're not sure why the Ramah was not doing it. So approach number one of the Mishnah Berurah was, That's mutter because it's Yev Shevalacha. Can't do it any other way, so that's called Efech Chila. In the second piece in the Be'er Halacha, which is actually 20 pages earlier, he has a different svar legamri. He has a svar that's called, it's Derech Tigun Achila, it's not a problem. And in that piece, he's willing to be Mekel, even though it could, you could take the good out of the bad, and many people do. Many people do take the chicken away from the bone, and it's okay. You can do bone, chicken, bone, whatever you want, as long as that's called Derech Tikkun Achila rather than Derech Halacha. So it is a nuance of a difference. But Tozi asking is that sometimes you have a fine line. You have something that most people really don't do, but it is doable. So that's what the Shmir Shabbos calls the Shaila about the watermelon seeds. He says that maybe you could be Mekel in the watermelon seeds even according to the first Mishnah Berurah. Because normal people go look, I eat a watermelon in the old days on a Tuesday night, unless you're having a Shabbos meal and something. But normal people, when you eat a watermelon Tuesday night, so you're not, you don't take the whole watermelon and start shooting out the seeds. The normal way to do it is to pluck away the seeds. So even though it's possible, maybe that's called so abnormal, since we shouldn't think the way of doing it, maybe that's also called the Yav Shavu Avach. That's a suffix in the first Mishnah Berurah. So again, see, there are two different approaches as to what this school is based on. Everyone agrees you can peel the garlic for immediate use, but not sure what the heter is that the big enough community would be. If it is doable, it is possible, like the chicken bones, the fish bones, or I am a chuyif to take the good from the bad or not. So the Chazon Ish didn't think the second kula was correct. He thought that there's no marker really for this second kula. The first kula, I think everyone accepts, but the second kula, he really wasn't sure that was right, and even Mishnah Berurah himself, it's not even so clear that he even accepts it. One place he writes, another place he has a different approach. So we're not so sure. So it was more of a limud chos. The Mishnah Berurah was not writing it outright that he was not there straight out just to push away all the fish bones and chicken bones, etc. He was writing it, and he writes explicitly, it's a limud chos on the people who are doing that. The Mishnah Berurah himself recommends not to follow this, but he says, what should you do? Tachlis, if you're really eating chicken, what should you do? So he said that you should try to take the chicken from the bone. And what if you want to remove the bone from the chicken? So he said we should do as follows. He says that if there's a little bit of chicken still left on the bone, even though I'm fundamentally removing the bone from the chicken, my real goal is to remove the bone from the chicken. I'm really going for the quote-unquote psalus for the ochel, but I can transform that psalus into ochel, namely if I take a little bite out of that chicken. There's a little strand of chicken left on the bone, so when I pull it away from the chicken that I do want, I take a little bite, eat a little bit of that, shines, and I was yotzei. So then I didn't take psalus for yarchum. That's also yarchum. It's a good thing. And then the Mishnah Berurah says, and what if there's no chicken left on the bone? So he says, well, maybe you can suck the bone a little bit, a little Eastern European style, a little suck the bone a little bit. It's also shtikol yarchum. It's also yotzei zayin yarchum. So the Chazon Ish didn't buy into the season. The Chazon Ish says, that's called psalus. It's a make-believe yarchum. Means really, truly, the guy does not want the bone. He really wants to eat the chicken. Oh, what? Somebody told him, Halacha says that you can't take the psalmos from the ochel. So he says, okay, I'm going to play a game. I'm going to turn the psalmos. Guess what? Now it's going to be called ochel. That's a game, says the Chazon Ish. It's not ochel, it's psalmos. The fact that he took a little sucking out of the little juice out of the bone, Lamala Pomeiri, that doesn't change anything. It's still psalmos from the ochel. So the Chazon Ish didn't like this whole story. He didn't like the Mishnah Berurah's first tzad to say that it's called Tikkun Oichel. So there's no source for that. And he didn't like this make-believe Oichel Psalus. So the Chazon Ish ate a full of fish. So the Chazon Ish said you should remove, if you're eating white fish, so you have to be careful to eat the fish from the bone, not to remove the bone from the fish, and not to remove the bone from the chicken. But again, there are a couple of Tzadim Mahakal. So those who are Mekel are following the others who are Noi Mahakal. Those people who are Mekel are following the Mishnah Berurah suggested. Even though Mishnah himself wasn't the biggest supporter of this idea. And then the SSAs, those who want to be Mekel, so it's by that they should at least do a token make-believe serving of the bone as some kind of an ochel, and maybe have another tzad of Mishnah Berurah in order to be Mekel.
Even if you don't eat the bone after, can you compare it to the taking away the fly with some of the soup with it?
Right. So in theory, you could, according to Mishnah Berurah, that would be probably okay, but remember the Chazon didn't buy that one either. Right, there was this running machlokes with the Mishnah Berurah, the Chazon Ish, and Rabbah. Mishnah Berurah has these 15 different potential kulas. The Mishnah Berurah himself is not thrilled about any of them. He just throws out all of those possibilities. And each one the Chazon Ish says, well, that's not right. There's no source for this, etc. Okay. But, so getting back to the regular rules of Berurah that the Gemara sets up for us, the Gemara lines up for us in the Fayin Dal and Shabbos, the three basic conditions that make Berurah mutter. It's an ochel with a psalus, whatever that means, biyad, using one's hands, and miyad, doing it for immediate use. And again, it's the combination, Rishonim explained, when you have these three factors together, so then we could call it, this is achil, this is just normal eating, this is not called derech melacha. So one of the conditions that seems to be really, really significant is the notion of biyad versus bekli. When a person uses a kli, uses a utensil to do bara with, that's a very, very serious problem. The Gemara says beitza. This is the Mishnah there. It actually is talking about bara and potential bara issues of yontif, whether they even exist. That answers the question. But again, the Mishnah and the Gemara differentiate between different kinds of kelim. If it's a kli amiyucha b'kach, if it's a kli that's used as a sifter, a strain, or something like that, that's a very, very serious problem. That's a deraisa nigi problem by rare. If the kli that you're using is a different kind of a kli, it's not so normal to be borrowed, that may minimize it to be a derabanan. But lamaisa, once you're doing a kli, so you have a real problem with the deraisa, derabanan, using kalim is out of the question when it comes to borrowing. Nevertheless, not all kalim are considered to be kalim for these purposes. How do you know whether something's called a kli? So sometimes a person is using a kli, it's technically, it's called a kli, but the role that you're using it for is not really to serve the purpose of the kli. You're really just using it as an extension of your hand. So Moshe has a discussion about, let's say a person is using a spoon, but not because the spoon doesn't help you be bigger. A spoon is not a strainer, it's not a sifter, it's not a sieve, it's not helping you strain. Why are you using a spoon? Why don't you just use your hands? The answer is because the same person who made sure you wash the dishes on Shabbos and told you to change your hands, so you're not using your hands. And they say, that minig of a saini be a daini. So that means that some people still use their hands. That was the minig. In Eastern Europe, they use their hands, they still use the minig of a saini be a daini. So if a person is only using a spoon because he doesn't want to dirty his hands, he doesn't want to alone aim to make the food dirty, so, but he's not doing it b'taras clean, b'taras b'yirer. So that's called biyadayim. That's okay. That's not considered to be a problem. If a person uses a fork, so then it becomes very tricky. How do you use a fork? So you can use a fork in one of two ways. Either you can use a fork, let's say you have a whole dish or something, and use a fork just to stick it into the food and take it out. So then I'm not really using the fork as a cliche or bowl. I'm just using it instead of sticking my fingers in. But if there's a lot of gravy, and I'm picking up the fork, and I'm letting all the gravy dip down, or there's some really, really... really shtievel style of coleslaw. It's got a lot of mayonnaise in it. A lot of juice coming out. I pick it up and I don't really want all that coke. And I'm just sitting there holding the cabbage and all the stuff is dripping through. So then I'm using a fork as a kli. That's a problem. I didn't say a fork as a kli. I'm yuchel b'chach, but it's still a kli, so that would be a problem. So the using of a kli is not always a problem. It just depends on what your goal of the kli is. If it's there, prepare b'chach, that would be a problem.
Isn't a knife a bigger problem than a fork or a chicken? A fork, you can in theory be using just to pick up the chicken. A knife, your mom is cutting you. Why are you cutting the chicken?
Right. So a knife, we assume, so that's not really also that brave or b'kach, because I could really rip it apart with my fingers. I really could, it's just not so nice to do that. So that's not really considered to be, a knife is usually not called a cliche, but right. Is there any type of a kli that I really am doing borer and I really want to do borer with it? I really want to separate something, but up to the some of that doesn't fall under the category of a kli problem. So there is a big chiddush from Shlomo Zalman that himself, it's not clear whether he himself even totally accepted it. He suggests this as a possibility at least, that what if you have a type of a kli, that this kli is derech achil b'kach. It means this is not a kli of sifting. It's not something you do in the kitchen, you're out before the meal. The only time you would ever use such a kli is in the process of eating or drinking. That's the dakabakach. That's how you pour the food. That's how you pour that. That's what you use to put the food onto your plate. And Shlomo Zalman says, maybe that's not called derech melach altogether. It's a kli. So it's almost like the same idea that Mishnah Berurah had by Ochum Tov Tzolos. These klolim are not iron clay. These are not absolute klolim. These are klolim that are there to measure as barometers. Are we dealing with derech achila, derech malacha? So if I can create a situation where even though I'm in a sense violating one of these klolim, but the overall picture is still derech achila, it could still be permissible. So Shlomo Zalman raises the question. Let's say you have a pitcher or something, you're pouring something through, and something else is getting held back. So maybe you could argue that that's not something you do in the kitchen as preparation. You do it on the table. I'm about to put myself a drink. Now something's being held behind by the kli, but maybe the halakhli, that's not called the kli. So Shlomo Zalman in one place, he seems to permit that. And then another place, he backs out a little bit because he talks about salt shakers. He talks about there are many people in the summertime who put rice in the salt shakers with the salt also, because the rice absorbs some of the humidity, and otherwise the salt begins to clump up. So many people do that. So the shaila is, are you allowed to use those salt shakers on Shabbos? Because when the salt is coming through the holes, so the hole is kli, and there's a yukalikah, but still serving as a kli, and it's blocking the rice from coming through. So Rav Shlomo Zalman said it's a problem. We spoke to that, which had the potential to be a problem. So the question is that really a problem? Is that the same as the pitcher? So either it's not the same as the pitcher, Rav Shlomo Zalman is in a sense contradicting himself, that he's not sure whether it's mutter, or maybe the salt shakers are worse, because people do salt foods in the kitchen also. Salting is not always something that is done right before the meal. So one should probably avoid using those kind of salt shakers. When I was in Moshe Kol all the summers, when I was the council, one of my jobs was to remove the rice out of the salt shakers every Friday afternoon. I used to go around dumping out all the rice out of the salt shakers. Shouldn't be a chashash of barer. So this shaila about the pitchers, or the pitchers of the shaila of barer or not. So this shaila was, I was witness to this shaila that played out between Rabbi Sheft and Rabbi Willig, exactly what it was, where it was, in the Homewack Hotel. And it's going to be 25 years ago, because it was the Shabbos that I spent together with my, wasn't my wife yet, we were Shabbos together, that's another story that I come another place, and my father-in-law was there at the time, who was out for the story, and it was a Yachikala that somehow got the great idea that it would be a good idea for me to speak at this Yachikala, because where he's going out, and I'll make a good impression. Of course, nobody bothers to figure out that the people in charge of Yachikala didn't approve of it, and it was Friday afternoon when I showed up, and it wasn't so simple, but the Baruch Hashem, they had some connections, they were able to get me into the hotel for limited the price that Shabbos. So anyway, all's well that ends well. But one of the things that took place that Shabbos was that Rabbi Sheff and Rabbi Willig were having a machlokes about pitchers in with ice in them, whether you could pour the water out, thereby blocking the ice from coming through, is that mutter or not? So one of the stars of the hotel was this idea that Rabbi Shlomo Zalman's born, that's a kli, that's derech achil, mamish derech asuda, so maybe that's legame, not considered to be a problem b'ira. Another time the cooler was is that the person wants the ice also. He really wants the water, only wants the ice. The only reason he doesn't want the ice is because he doesn't want to be a chazer and steal all the ice. He wants to leave some behind for the next guy. But he really would like some of the ice to come through. It's a very dapper sticky shayla. Is that called psolos? Because he has good midos. Is that called psolos? Or because he has lousy midos? Is that called psolos? So those were some of the hot issues, no fun, that was going on at that particular Shabbos. But actually, many, many great things came out of the Shabbos. Number one, we got engaged soon afterwards. And number two, we were mabara that machlokes on the rabbanim about what the status of Bora pitchers is. And we left it hanging. We're not sure what the answer to that question is. At least we were mabara. One thing, we got engaged. The other part, we're not sure. Okay, let's jump to next year. We'll probably be the day after Pesach. We'll call next year. We'll give everyone a travel day. And hopefully, let's jump to the following week.
Is also
okay.